Well, let's get back together again and continue our discussion of the peace that Jesus brings. We began talking about peace, and it comes from the encouragement that Jesus gave to the disciples. And of course, it takes on an added poignancy, I guess, when you think about Jesus making this statement, and he knows that within just about a week he's going to be crucified. But Jesus said, "I leave my peace with you." And what a great promise it is. We talked about how God watches over the heart and he watches over the mind, and that gives us a sense of hope, a sense of security. It's at this point we're talking about peace that God gives us. But, you know, in order to have that peace that God gives us, we have to have peace with God. So we talked a little bit about peace with God. We talked about how it's the removing of hostility between God and us. And, you know, when we leave God, it's not as if we just kind of move away a little bit. We are actively in rebellion against God. We're doing everything we can not to be with God. But this hostility can be removed. It's warfare, and God has the ability to stop this warfare. What brings it about is Jesus' blood on the cross. That's really what we need in order to make this beautiful transition from being at war with God to God dwelling in us. And we're going to talk a little bit more this morning about this idea of atonement, or restoring the relationship between God and man, putting us back together. Atonement kind of assumes that the breach has happened. The cause of the breach was our rebellion. It wasn't God who started this war. It was us. And atonement is the effort of the Creator to restore the relationship that he had with the creature so that the creature benefits. And that's what's so amazing about the idea of atonement. Let's think a little bit about some of the terminology that you see used to describe atonement. In the Old Testament, of course, Old Testament, everybody knows, the Old Testament was written in Hebrew. So you have Hebrew words that talk about atonement. There's the first one. I'm not even going to try to pronounce the Hebrew. I spent about 6 weeks trying to learn how to speak Hebrew. When I was living in Alaska, one of the synagogues there had classes, and they offered them free to anybody that wanted to come. Now, they were having classes for Hebrew children, and these little Hebrew boys who were 6 years old were just running circles around me, and it was so embarrassing that I quit about the time I learned the Hebrew alphabet. And that's been so long ago that now my brain has leaked and I don't remember even what I learned. But the Hebrew is a very expressive language. The first word is up there, and it means essentially to cover, to eliminate the sin from being like a sore thumb that just constantly affects everything that we have to do with God. It's a process And it's interesting that it's a process. It was accomplished through blood sacrifice. Look at Exodus, the 29th chapter, verse 36. In Exodus 29, he's talking about personal sin, what I have done. And I make a personal sacrifice, a personal blood sacrifice. He says it this way: every day shalt thou offer the bullock of sin offering for atonement. Thou shalt cleanse the altar when thou makest atonement for it, thou shalt anoint it to sanctify it. So every day the priest would make atonement for his own sin. And the individual Israelites would make atonement as well. It's been estimated that it would take about 33% of a Hebrew man's salary in order to make all of the sacrifices that they had to make. They had to make a morning sacrifice, an evening sacrifice. They had sacrifices on the holy days. But through all of it, it was an individual making a sacrifice that was a blood sacrifice. Then you go to Leviticus, the fourth chapter, and at verse 20, he's talking about a national sacrifice, national sin. Now, that's not something that we think too much about. It was important for the Israelites because the Israelites were a theocracy. And if the nation sinned, if the nation didn't listen to what God said, then the nation had to make a sacrifice. Now they did it through the priesthood. The priests were the representatives of the nation, but they're making a sacrifice for a nation. Leviticus 4 at verse 20, thus shall he do with the bullock as he did with the bullock for the sin offering, so shall he do with this. And the priest shall make atonement for them, and they shall be forgiven. So this is a national sacrifice. We don't have that aspect of atonement in the New Testament. But we do have some expansion on the idea of personal atonement. This sacrifice that they made, they did make a blood sacrifice in order to bring themselves into a good relationship with God, but it wasn't all a blood sacrifice. There was also a change that had to take place in the individual. In Numbers, the fifth chapter, at verse 8, he talks about two aspects of making things right. Number five, at verse 8, he says, if the man have no kinsman to whom restitution can be made for the guilt. Now, this is talking about a time when you've killed a man. If the man has no kinsman to whom restitution can be made for the guilt, the restitution for guilt which is made to Jehovah shall be the priests. Besides the ram of atonement, whereby atonement shall be made for him. So he not only had to make restitution to the person that he had hurt or his relatives, he also had to make this blood sacrifice. So when we focus on blood sacrifice, sometimes we take it out of the realm of what this means for the individual. And we think only about the individual going and getting a ram and sacrificing a ram, and the sacrifice of the ram is enough to cleanse that individual of sin. The individual still had to take steps. Now, there's something else that gets kind of hinted at in the Old Testament. And I wish we had time to read all of these passages. You can look at these passages this afternoon or tonight, but we're not going to take time to read all of these passages. Just suffice it to say at this point, we understand the concept of blood sacrifice. We understand the concept of restitution, change that has to take place in the individual. And there is a sense in which we're going to introduce something new in the New Testament. Before we do that, though, let's talk about this other term, hata. And hata is not a word that's used as often in the Old Testament to refer to atonement, but hata talks about that by which the atonement is accomplished. So you have the idea of atonement or covering, and then you have the idea of that thing that makes this possible. Now, let's look at the New Testament. In the Greek, there's the word. I am not going to try to pronounce that word. That word is harder to pronounce than hapa. This word means to appease, to make reconciliation or to atone for. There's another word in the Greek, and I'm not going to pronounce that one either. And it kind of answers to that second idea that we saw, atonement, and the means by which the atonement happens. This word means to exchange, to restore to favor, or to reconcile. So two ideas. Now, I said in the Old Testament sacrifices, there was a provision for man's reconciliation to God. The Old Testament talks a little bit about the intrinsic value of the thing that's been offered. You remember a time when David had numbered the children of Israel, and he wanted to know how big his army was. Well, God had told the kings of Israel never to number the people. David did it anyway, and so now God brings on the people of Israel this awful judgment because of David's sin. And David wants to make a sacrifice to God to atone, to put the relationship back together. And he goes to Araunah. Araunah is apparently a guy who was a farmer. He's wealthy enough that he owned some land. And he went to Araunah and he said, I want to make a sacrifice. Give me a spot where I can make a sacrifice. And Araunah said, take my threshing floor. Take my instruments. You need a fire. Take a bull out of my flock or out of my herd. Use that for your sacrifice. And David said, no, I won't take it from you. I won't sacrifice to God with that which costs me nothing. So he's hinting at intrinsic value. Look at Malachi, the first chapter, beginning at verse 6. The people of God had become kind of complacent about their sacrifices, and when they became complacent, they let themselves fall into this trap of thinking that it was an awful burden on them to have to make these sacrifices. Can you imagine falling into that trap? God has given them a way to make atonement, to come back together with God. And they began to think of that as a terrible burden. But that's what happens when you fall into this trap. Let's look at Malachi, the first chapter. And again, here in the Old Testament, we're just hinting at this idea of intrinsic value. Malachi 1, beginning at verse 6, and this is written in an odd form. You see it sometimes in the prophets. And it's like there's this conversation between God and the people. And Malachi is just telling us both sides of this conversation. Okay? So watch what happens as you switch back and forth from God to the people. God says, and I'm supplying that, okay, Malachi 1, verse 6. God says, a son honors his father and a servant his master. If then I am a father, where's my honor? If I'm a master, where is my fear? Saith Jehovah, the Lord of hosts, unto you, O priest that despise his name. And the priests say, wherein have we despised thy name? And God says, you offered polluted bread on my altar. And the priests say, when did we pollute thee? And God says, in that you say the table of Jehovah is contemptible. When you offer the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? When you offer the lame and the sick, is it not evil? Present it now to the governor. Will he be pleased with thee? Or will he accept thy person, says Jehovah, the Lord of hosts? Now I pray you. This is what Malachi says. After he's given us both sides of this conversation, he said, now I pray you, entreat the favor of God that he may be gracious unto us. This hath been by your means. Will he accept any of your persons, says the Lord of hosts? Oh, that there were some among you that would shut the doors, that you might not kindle fire on my altar in vain. I have no pleasure in you, says Jehovah the Lord of hosts. Neither will I accept this offering at your hand. From the rising of the sun even to the going down of the same, my name shall be great among the Gentiles. In every place incense shall be offered unto my name, and a pure offering. For my name shall be great among the Gentiles, saith Jehovah of hosts. But you profane it. You make it something common. In that you say the table of Jehovah is polluted, the fruit thereof, even his food is contemptible. You say, behold, what weariness it is. You snuffed at it, says Jehovah of hosts. You brought that which was taken by violence and the lame and the sick. Thus you bring your offering. Should I accept this at your hand, saith Jehovah? Cursed be the deceiver who hath in his flock a male and boweth and sacrificed unto the Lord a blemished thing. For I'm a great king, saith Jehovah of hosts. My name is terrible among the Gentiles. If we offer to God that which we do not value, we demean God. And the idea of atonement becomes nothing more than a burden that we bear. I can't imagine how we could get to that point, thinking that it's just a burden. I have to come here on Sunday morning, and I have to take the Lord's Supper. It's because we begin to think that the sacrifice that we're offering to God isn't worth anything. Now, next week, we'll talk about how there really is a great deal of value in the sacrifice that we bring to God. That's the book of Hebrews, right? We're not talking about the blood of bulls and goats. We're talking about the offering of Jesus. And because Jesus is willing to make this sacrifice, because he is the Lamb, we can have this relationship with God. Do you want this? Put Jesus on in baptism. He can restore the relationship that you lost. You want to return to this relationship? Pray, ask for God's forgiveness. He's promised he would forgive. It's all because of what Jesus did.